Martin Sheen humming.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Diamond Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio once again. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat, coming to you from Vancouver, British Columbia. And Mr. Brendan Lear is a country boy who can't survive, coming to us from Regina, Saskatchewan. Little change in location for Mr. Lear.
The jewel of the prairies, the center of inland Canada, the Queen City, the home of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Yeah, and for the American listeners, it's Thanksgiving weekend up here in Canada, or Thanksgiving is at a different period of time in the month, or of the year, rather, so that's why you're out in Regina, right?
I've traveled afar to celebrate the true Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Is there, like, you can have a lot of pumpkin pie and turkey this weekend?
Well, I'm sick right now. I'm sick as a dog and pissed off.
Yeah, sorry to hear that, man. Nothing that a good old Saskatchewan...
I got sick on my epic drive down here, and then I woke up this morning and someone had emailed me a copy of Hank Williams' Country Boy Can't Survive and insisted that I listen to it, so... That basically angered me for the rest of the day.
Well, I think it's a lot of the lyrics in that song are quite very identifiable to Saskatchewan and Regina. And, wouldn't you think? Aren't you cooking up some moonshine and some homemade wine and skinning some bucks?
What I'm cooking up is I'm trying to cook up someone who can resurrect Hank Williams Sr. to come and give his son an ass whipping that he should have given him when he was being raised, I guess.
Well, you're probably offending a lot of, including myself, I may add. I'll throw my hat in with all Hank Williams Jr. fans, that I agree with all of you listening that I'm greatly offended by Brennan's comments as well.
I'm more of a Hank Jr. fan, a Hank the Third fan myself.
Yeah, well, today we've got another packed show, as always. We have Mark Hominick coming on the show. He, of course, fought last weekend's TKO, a unanimous decision victory over Samuel Guillet. So we'll have him on the show, and then as well John Fitch, one of the UFC's better welterweights. If you look at the wins he's had in his three fights in the UFC, he's undefeated. So we're going to have him on the program. I think he's a guy who doesn't get a lot of attention out there. Let's get into it. We'll bring John Fitch on the show right away, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
The International Fight League returns to Portland's Memorial Coliseum Thursday, November 2nd for the World Team Championship Semifinals. Hometown hero Matt Lindland leads his team, the Wolfpack, into battle against Bosrutin's Anacondas. And Pat Miletich pits his team, the Silverbacks, against Carlos Newton's Dragons.
Plus, two super fights you don't want to miss.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. John Fitch. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I can't complain. John, of course, is taking on Kuniyoshi Hironaka at the upcoming UFC 64 next Saturday night, October 14th. And John, I guess my first question for you is, what do you know about Hironaka, and how are you guys approaching this fight?
He's pretty well-rounded. He's a tough opponent. UFC doesn't give me any easy fights. Extremely skilled on the ground. He's got some good judo. His stand-up is lacking, but he still has a good chin and he's willing to trade. So he's pretty well-rounded.
Yeah, he's taken out some pretty good guys, for a fight that not too many people are aware of Hironaka. He's beaten Nick Diaz, beaten Ryan Schultz, Renato Verissimo most recently. Yeah. Have you been able to get some tape on him and take a look at him?
Yeah, I've gotten to see his fight with Diaz and... I actually saw this fight with Aoki, but that wasn't much to see. And I've gotten some play-by-plays and some descriptions of his other fights. It's gonna be a tough fight. I'm looking forward to it. I like fighting tough people. I don't really like walk-through fights.
Yeah.
I want an established record. I want people to look and be impressed by the fights that I've had, not just, you know, impressed by the number of wins I have. John, where are you preparing for this fight?
Do you have a kickboxing academy here in San Jose, California.
So do you, and how long have you been training out there?
It's been 3 years. This last May, I moved out. I finished a year of grad school, Purdue University, and the day after I finished my last final, I put as much stuff in my car as I could fit, and I moved to California.
Wow.
And so is there a lot of pressure on your shoulders now with the recent and phenomenal success that your fellow fighters have been having out of there?
No, it's just great because we have a good attitude. We have a good work ethic in the gym. We got a great number of trainers. You know, we're able to work with multiple trainers. We're not restricted. I mean, a lot of times with fight trainers, you get latched down to one trainer and you got to stick with that one trainer. But we take more of a team aspect to it, where we have, you know, several trainers that we can go to for different things and work with, and they're all open and okay with it. The pressure is no pressure at all.
Now, John, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this, and I know I've read some other articles where people have, you know, made mention of the fact that perhaps you're probably one of the better fighters in the States that hasn't really received a great deal of press, especially when you consider that you've taken out Thiago Alves, Berkman, Brock Larson in your last three fights, won 10 in a row. Do you feel that you've been given the recognition you deserve?
I mean, you know, I'm not really looking for recognition. I'm just out there doing what I love doing. I don't care if, you know, a million people know who I am or if 50 people know who I am. It doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
As long as I make enough money to keep training and fighting, you know, I'm pretty happy. I've spent my life as a wrestler, amateur wrestling. We don't have big crowds, you know. I've wrestled in front of 15 people. I've wrestled in front of 10,000 people. I've wrestled just as hard every match, so it's not really important to me.
Do you think that sort of humility about what you do in the ring and your that attitude to training is a virtue of being an amateur wrestler?
I think it's one of the great things that I take away from that amateur wrestling experience. The other part would be the competition, the sheer number of matches that I've had. You know, there's not really pressure. You're not really worried about, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of guys who come in from backgrounds where they're maybe just traditional martial artists, or maybe they just started right away in MMA training, you know, they may have 10 fights, but that's only 10 times they've been in front of large crowds. So, you know, it's I think it's a definite advantage.
You mentioned that you like, you know, it's not so much about the amount of wins, but rather the wins over the opponents. And you, of course, are competing in an extremely tough and deep welterweight division in the UFC. You've also fought at 185, which I think a lot of people might say that there's not as much competition up there. Why did you choose? Do you feel that you're best at 170? Have you ever thought about going back up to 185? Or does it not really matter considering your success?
I think for right now, I'm best at 170. In the future, as I get a little older, I think it'll be harder to make the weight. So, you know, it's always been in the back of my mind, you know, possibly moving up weight class. But, you know, that's at least 3, maybe 5 years away from me to consider that. Right now I'm having a lot of success, and I really love the fact that the UFC is pretty much the only big organization that has a welterweight weight class. You know, like Pride and K1 and some of the other shows out there, you know, don't really have that welterweight weight class. They don't have the money to have the best guys, so I'd say almost all the best guys at 170 are in the UFC right now, and that's a pretty attractive thing to me. It's, you know, the best of the best are all in that weight class. There's no argument about, well, you know, like with the heavyweights, so if I got better heavyweights or so and so, if you got better 205-pounders or whatever, it's, no, pretty much the bulk of the best 170-pounders are in the UFC.
John, did you wrestle as well at 170?
No, I wrestled at 174 and then 184. I was my senior year, wrestled 84.
So what's your action?
Smaller now than I was in college.
And is it just getting tougher and tougher every year to get down to 170, or have you basically got that dialed in now?
No, I got it dialed in. I had to find a balance with diet and the workouts, and a big part of it is I don't lift much anymore at all. I'm actually probably as strong as I need to be to fight at 170.
When I was in college, I was lifting pretty heavily, 4 times a week, and added 10 pounds of weight pretty easily right there.
John, when you first started your career, professional MMA fighter, I'm talking about, back in 2002, you mentioned the wrestling background. Your only two losses came within your first four fights against Mike Pyle and Wilson Gouveia, and then since then you've rattled off something like 14, 15 wins in a row. What do you attribute that to? Did you start your career with mostly just wrestling, or had you actually done more jiu-jitsu and stand-up at that time?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know much about the game, fight game, really. I kind of jumped into the deep water before I really knew how to swim. Most of my success came after I moved up to California. When I first started, I was pretty much just wrestling and hitting heavy bag. I was trying to do some submission stuff for other people, but I wasn't getting that much work in. I mean, I got a little bit of work in with Tom Erickson and Gary Goodrich, but those guys, they're not submission guys, they're not ground guys. The grapplers, Tom as far as ground and pound, but, I mean, it doesn't really work for smaller guys, but big guys with big techniques. So most of my success came from when I moved out to California, where I really was exposed to more technique, more trainers, more technical fighting.
John, do you find that wrestling skills, or do you find that you work significantly now in your wrestling skills, or do you just immerse yourself in submissions and stand up? Is the wrestling, will it always carry over, or is that something you have to still keep tuned in?
You fine tune it a little bit here and there, but it's one of those things. You know, even doing it for 17 years, it's kind of like riding a bike. Find ways. I had to find ways to really adapt it to fit into the fight game, because it doesn't exactly carry over into the fight game. There's little things you got to change about it, which I have, and I don't need to spend as much time. The percentage of time I spend on wrestling is nowhere near what I spend on the submission game and my stand-up.
John, looking at your record, both Brendan and I are up. We're Canadians, or we're doing the show from Canada, and before you made it to the UFC, you had a notable fight, and it was a great fight. We were lucky to see it up here on, I think it was on TSN, against Jeff Joslin, another Canadian, at the Freedom Fight last summer, 2005. You came away with a split decision victory. Now, Jeff's only two losses have come against Jonathan Goulet and yourself. He hasn't had that many fights, but maybe from your point of view, being in the UFC, can you give us some insight on, do you think Jeff Joslin is capable of competing in the UFC?
I think he could, yeah. There's definitely guys in the UFC that he could beat.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I think he needs to be active. He needs to, you can't just, say I had tough fights with these guys, put me in the UFC. He needs to be more active to get there. But I definitely think he could be there. He has the skills to be there. I don't know if he deserves to be there yet. He needs some more wins. Mm-hmm. He needs more fights, more wins over fairly named opponents.
We have asked a number of people this, and this has been a sort of a recurring theme in our show. And you come from a sort of big training center with a lot of fighters that appear in the UFC. What's your attitude coming from one of these big schools about fighting people who... You potentially fighting people who you train with and who you know. Different fighters seem to have different perspectives on this. What do you think?
It depends. How much of a part of the team you are. We have a big team, but we train with a lot of guys, but not all the guys we train with are the core team. Those core team guys I probably would never fight. Like Josh Koscheck's a guy I'll never fight. But to me, with that whole fighting thing, a good example is Jake Shields. We train together quite a bit, and we've both talked, and we have no problem with fighting each other. We're friends, but we train together, but it'd have to be a title fight, but I mean, we would fight. To me, it's the whole attitude I have about the sport and the way I look at the sport. It's not about people who hate each other and want to hurt each other. It's no different than a couple guys playing the game of one-on-one basketball.
Yeah.
You know, you could go out and play one-on-one with your best friend. It doesn't mean that you hate the guy or you don't like the guy or whatever. As far as possibly splitting your training camps up, that's something I wouldn't want to see. That's the reason me and Koscheck would never fight, because if we did, then I would split our gym in half as far as training and whatever, and that'd be too much of a mess, and it's not worth it.
Now, John, I'm sure you don't want to look too beyond your upcoming fight, but of course, welterweight division, we were talking about the depth of it earlier, and you know, consistently you hear that phrase, the big three, George St. Pierre, Matt Hughes, BJ Penn. Some people, you know, a lot of people are trying to put Diego Sanchez in there. Where do you think you match up against some of those top echelon fighters?
I'd give any one of them a hell of a fight right now. Give me 6 months to a year, I'll beat any one of those guys. And that's I'm pretty confident in saying that. The rate I'm improving, I think, you know, there's no one I can't compete with at this point in my career. And in another 6 months to a year, I wouldn't see why there's no reason I wouldn't be able to beat any of them.
Yeah.
Is it just a coincidence now that you fought on the fight nights almost exclusively in the last 6 months to a year?
I don't know what's going on. I mean, I'm just happy to be fighting. I'm not sure what the UFC has planned for me. I don't know. I have no idea what they're doing. I don't know why they haven't released any of my fights. They're finally giving me a shot here on a swing bout and putting me on the pay-per-view. I don't know if that has something to do with it. I've been telling everybody since my last couple fights to start emailing. So I don't know if it has anything to do with the fans emailing in and requesting to see the fight or see me fight, or they just finally decided to that maybe I'm the real deal and they're going to give me a shot to perform in front of a crowd. So I don't know.
Yeah, I went and checked
the
UFC On Demand, and I don't think there was even one of your fights on the UFC On Demand.
No, I don't know what to do. I mean, I can't explain it. I don't see why. It's not like they're boring fights. They're exciting fights. The Larson fight went to a decision, but, you know, I wish it could have been a little more fast-paced. I think it held back a little bit because it was my first UFC. Maybe they take you at your word that you just don't care. they got to put the pretty boys on TV, like, you know. Like,
I guess, I don't know. I didn't think I was that ugly, but
I don't know. I'm not camera friendly, I guess. Maybe it's the personality. Maybe I just don't have a personality that's worthy of television. Maybe that's why I didn't get on the reality TV show either. I don't know.
See, this is where your humility is coming back to haunt you, John.
I guess. So I'm still happy, and I'm eating well, so.
Now, you mentioned you're on the swing bout. Before we let you go, what are your thoughts on that card? I mean, you're clearly going to be concentrating on your fight, but we always like to get some of the perspectives from the fighters themselves. What's your take on Rich Franklin and Anderson Silva?
Yeah, I'm happy to get to see that. It's cool that I get to be on the same card as those guys. Man, I just can't wait to see it because I know how tough both of them are. It could be a hell of a fight. Could be legendary, really. I mean, they both have, their stand-up skills are pretty obscene. And, I mean, I think Franklin has an advantage on the ground, but, from my knowledge of him, he's pretty good at getting back to his feet. I haven't seen him fight as much, as I have Franklin, but, I mean, that's just gonna be a good fight. Mm-hmm. And then, Shurkin and, Jimmy Fornier is gonna be interesting too, I wanna see how that pans out. I kind of lean towards Sean, but I don't know. I'll see what Kenny's got.
No, it's definitely a very deep card, and we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy training as you get ready for UFC 64. John, we wish you all the best of luck, and take care.
Hey, no problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good luck to you.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With a full contact fighter shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight Shorts, Camouflage Board Shorts, Corduroy and Camo Hats, Hooded Sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter Clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. The Machine, Mark Hominick, joins Full Contact Fighter Radio now. And Mark, thanks for taking some time out of your training schedule today to join the show.
Oh, no worries.
Now, Mark, of course, the big news for yourself is this past weekend, the unanimous decision victory over Samuel Guillet at the TKO. And I guess first off, Mark, I read some of the reports. Unfortunately, I wasn't there to see the fight. It sounds like you were utilizing the leg kicks a lot. Are those reports pretty accurate?
Oh, yeah. Beat his legs pretty bad in the fight. I was really surprised. You know, he kept going. He kept, picking himself off the mat and getting up. He's a tough fighter, and, he fought till the end. Would have liked to finish him, but, he's a tough guy.
Now, going in, were you expecting Sam to try to take you down as much as possible, and did he try taking you down a lot?
Yeah, oh, for sure. That was definitely his plan. The whole time, the whole fight, I was chasing him, putting forward momentum on him. But just the leg kicks just completely slowed him down. He had no power in his shot. And the only time he did get a takedown was off when I threw a high kick or like a body kick. You catch a leg and kind of just trample me to the mat.
Overall, what would you rate your performance?
I was happy that, I put the pace on him, kept striking the whole time. But, like I said, I would have liked to finish him.
Now, it's got to be pretty tough for people maybe who haven't heard. You were scheduled to fight Ivan Menjivar, and then you had to change an opponent. I guess it was maybe about a week before, or was it a little bit longer?
Yeah, a week and a half out.
Yeah. So, we had Sean on last week, and he was defending Team Tompkins as far as there were some people out there who were, suspicious of whether or not Ivan had been scheduled to fight in K1, and everyone has known this for quite some time, shortly just around the corner here, only a few days away now. And Sean was on the program defending, yourself and himself and Team Tompkins as far as you guys were preparing for Ivan Menjivar.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I don't think we have anything to defend, because we were training for Ivan. We were ready to fight Ivan. We were willing to fight Ivan. So, with him pulling out, that's his decision. It's not mine. Mm-hmm. It was a risky fight to take. It was a tough fight. But, I'm always up for the challenge, and I took the fight, and I was ready to go.
I guess the reasons that have been released, Ivan decided that in his stand-up, that maybe hadn't his training in the stand-up aspect of his game wasn't coming along to the level that he thought he would need against you, and he's got a big fight against Cal Uno coming up. And I guess, the point that people are making, and it's somewhat reasonable, is if he was going to fight you first, the kind of fighter you are, there's a good chance that he's going to come out, or there's a likely chance that he could come out of that fight cut, something to that effect. So the reasons that he gave kind of do make sense. I mean, whether or not someone should, the merits of agreeing to two fights in a 10-day, 12-day span is another argument. But you can understand from his point of view. I mean, his fight with Cal Uno is a big opportunity.
I can definitely see why he pulled out of the fight. Like, for sure, he's fighting in the Heroes Tournament, one of the biggest lightweight tournaments in the world, 10 days after my fight. And I guarantee if he had fought me, he wouldn't have been going in there 100%. He would be coming off a loss, or he'd be coming off an injury, because he would have went through a war with me. And hopefully down the road that fight does happen, and we can have that war, because I know the fans are really looking forward to it, and so were Ivan and myself. But with the dates for the K1 tournament, I can I respect his decision. It's obviously a big fight over there to take, and I wish him the best.
Yeah, well, I think that's the key thing here to remember, is I think people are just disappointed because very rarely in Canada does a fight like that really get the attention that it did.
Oh, for sure. And there was a huge fight that people want to see for years. And, he's always been in the back of my head. Like, I've always, wanted to test myself. Am I good enough to take Ivan out? And, that was the time to do it.
People in the States that follow the UFC, and, Canadian fans as well, you're 2-0 in the UFC. You've got wins against Yves Edwards and George Gurgel. We had George on the program a little while ago, and he had voiced his displeasure with the decision. He also agreed that he thought that he made some mistakes strategically against you, but would like a rematch somewhere down the road. He realizes that that's not going to materialize right now. But when you look at your performances so far, and in particular the one against George, do you still maintain that you won that fight?
Oh, I definitely won that fight. I won 2 of 3 rounds. I know that. So the score was right, 29-28. The third round, I was very, disappointed with the way I fought, I think. Just because, I was backtracking a bit, more than I should have, but except for, going attack and then defend the takedown. I was more worried about the takedown than anything else in the third round. But in the first few rounds, I swept, and I was attacking with my hands, and I was on the offense unless he was going for the takedown. It was just the third round, I was backpedaling a bit, but again, you gotta respect his game, and he's very strong on the ground. I was trying to avoid the takedown.
Now, have you guys had any further negotiations with the UFC? When we talked to Sean last week, we both sort of laughed about
There hasn't any names really thrown out yet, but I'd love to fight in the UFC in November because it looks like Kiyoki's trying to postpone this, rematch with me as long as he can. So I don't know if it's him or his manager or whatever it is. I'm gonna have to wait till February to fight Kiyoki. So I want to fight in November. So hopefully the UFC will bring it back.
Now the name that's been constantly circulated is Joe Stevenson. If that was to happen, Mark, how do you think you match up against a guy like Joe?
Well, that's a tough fight just because of the size and the strength advantage he would have. But, I think my conditioning would really show in that fight. As long as I can get through the first round without taking any big elbows and getting caught, I think I could finish him later in the second and third rounds. I think my pace would just, increase as the fight went on, and my condition would really show.
Now, you mentioned Hatsu Hioki, and that's a rematch fight that TKO fans, Canadian fans, are really anxious to see. Hatsu, of course, taking out Jeff Curran in his last fight. So yeah. You're saying that now that it appears that fight might be delayed?
It's going to be in February at the Bell Center Montreal again, and I think that's going to be a huge fight. There's going to be a lot of, history and, bad blood behind the fight, and the fans are going to be excited for that one, as I am.
I've talked to you about Hatsu and Sean and Jeff Curran. He came on the program shortly before Hatsu Hioki, before he fought Hatsu. How surprised were you guys at that result? Were you all expecting Jeff to take him out?
Well, we were, we wanted Jeff to go out and do his thing on the big show and take out Hioki. Kind of the whole, the revenge and Jeff's big shot and pride. We were looking forward to it. And, with Hioki beating him, I was, I was a little shocked, to say the least, that's for sure. Thought he was going to knock him out or submit him either way, but I think Hioki showed that, or solidified the fact that he really is the top fighter in the 145 division. So, that rematch with me is going to, I just have to take him out.
You mentioned that it's being delayed. Can you give us any more sort of insight into that? I mean, were you guys actually, obviously you were supposed to fight this past TKO.
I wanted him this TKO. I wanted him the TKO after, after he beat me. I want him the next TKO, whatever, wherever I can get him. I want to get my hands on him, that's for sure. TKO is having a show November 11th, I believe, in Victoriaville, and it's not going to happen there, which we hoped, but it's February. I think that fight needs to be at the Bell Center. It's a very big big venue, and it's going to be a big fight, and a lot of fans are going to want to see it. So, I'm happy about that point, that part of it.
Is it a situation where perhaps is he taking some fights in Pride Bushido again before?
I don't think it's Hioki, ducking me. Think his manager, he just came off a big win in Pride. I'm sure, he's a star over in Japan right now.
Yeah.
So they want to maybe give him time to train or maybe even take a Pride Bushido or Pride again before he fights me. Maybe build his name a bit more. I don't, who knows what the answer is, but whatever it is, February is going to be the time.
Team Tompkins had a great night at the recent TKO.
Oh, yeah.
All of you guys came away with wins. What was that like? I mean, you go to an event and pretty much all of you guys across the board had very important fights as far as
awesome.
Placing your career.
It was the training camp we had, leading up to it. There was just, everyone was just training so hard, and we brought in the right people to help us train. Like, we had Mac Danzik up. We had Gray from Science Center down in Vegas. Three-time All-American wrestler. We just brought in the right people to train, and we really put an importance on this TKO, and we trained and won.
Now, you mentioned Mac Danzik. He was just on the program earlier this week, and he had talked about the fact he came up to train with you guys, and he said, he had heard the stories or people talking about how hard you guys train, especially from a conditioning side of things, and he said, when you actually go and train with you guys, it's certainly, you find out very quick that it is... quite true. You guys spend a lot of time on the conditioning. It's a very intense workout.
Oh, it's a serious gym. It's a fighter's gym, and when other fighters come up, they actually see the difference that we make. The sacrifice we make when we train, and the importance we take in training for the fights. But it was great to have Mac up. He really helped our ground game. That guy's a stud, and he should be fighting in all the big shows. I think he's just. He's under contract with King of the Cage, so he's having a hard time, getting other fights other than the King of the Cage. So, in the future, you'll see him, UFC, Pride, he's ready.
Now, we should probably have Chris on the show and talk to him about it, but he had the arm injury. He was supposed to fight Samuel Guillet, and then you know, the change up in opponents because of Ivan not taking the fight. But, you know, quite often I get asked about Chris and whether or not he might be coming into the UFC. For those people who haven't seen him fight or seen him train and maybe have only seen him fight, you know, on the IFL, tell people a little bit about how this guy's, you know, appears that he's the real deal.
Well, he's amazing. The kid's 18 years, like, 18, or he just turned 19, actually, last week. The kid just died. Like, you know, he can do it all, strike, grapple, wrestle. He's got all the tools, and he's got a heart. He's got a great chin, and he's just got that warrior spirit, like, never give up. If you can see his last fight in the IFL, you know, the guy's got a full of Kimura on him, kept fighting. You know, the guy would, you know, most guys would have tapped off that submission, tore a bunch of, you know, ligaments in his shoulder, kept fighting through, won the decision, a really tough fight, and he just got all the tools, and you're just going to keep getting better, you know. He's been training with us since he's been about 14 years old. He's been doing fighter training since he was 14 years old, so, you know, nothing's new to him. You know, people think he's stepping up, but people should think that they're stepping up to fight him.
Mark, my last question for you is just sort of about the general state of MMA. I mean, if you look at the next couple weeks alone, you've got a couple of UFC cards, Pride's debut in the States. If you look at this past weekend up here in Canada, we had four events in one weekend. The Elite FC, we had TKO, King of the Cage, Rumble in the Cage as well. Did you ever think, I mean, you've been fighting now for a few years, training for a long time. Did you ever honestly think that the sport would get to this point where it is now?
You know, deep down, I always wished it would. And, you know, in my own thoughts, I thought it would. Just because, you know, how passionate I was about sport. But, yeah. I really didn't think it'd hit mainstream. You know, the reality show is just completely blown up, and it's just amazing because, you know, when I was going through school, you know, for the 4 years I went to school, I fought, you know, throughout those years, and I thought, you know, I was going to just do this, you know, for the time being, and, you know, I never in a million years thought I'd be doing this, you know, full-time, doing this as a full-time job, training, fighting, you know, doing this professionally. I never in a million years thought that would happen, and it's just, it's blowing up, and you know, sponsors are jumping on board, and that's what's, you know, allowing the fighters to train full time, because, you know, the paydays aren't quite there, you know, the way they should be.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, that'll come as more shows pop up and more competitors and fighters see, you know, the opportunity they have. But, you know, the sponsors are jumping on board, and that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I should say that too, that the sport as far as the number of events is huge and the coverage the sport's getting, but yeah, there's definitely still a little ways to go in the pay scale of things, but, you know.
But for acceptance, you know, like you walk down the street and people know about UFC or know about, you know, mixed martial arts. It's in a lot of the big newspapers now, people are writing articles about the fighters, you know, now there's a few faces with the sport. I think that's one thing the sport always was missing. You know, they always promoted UFC the spectacle, not the sport, not the athletes. Now, you know, when you think of UFC, you don't always just think, okay, Ultimate Fighting. You think of, you know, Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, Matt Hughes, you know, like all the big names, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, UFC's got a face. They have a face now, not just just the Ultimate Fighting.
Well,
their name behind it.
You already hear some cries by some and some criticism that perhaps the sport's already reached its saturation point, particularly in the States because there's so many events. You know, and myself, my own point of view on that is I don't necessarily think that it's at the saturation point yet, but I think more than ever the case could be made for, you know, we need more event integration so you can kind of, for these new fans, they can understand, you know, maybe what their local events mean, what, you know, what grassroots fighters, where they're heading, etc. I think
for
there's
sure.
Sometimes some confusion in that respect still.
Yeah, and it's been like that, you know, in the Midwest, but the Midwest is always going to stay that, you know, grassroots level.
Yeah.
And it sucks because they have so many good fighters. But yeah, you know, people are going to jump on board once they, you know, see that, you know, UFC is not the only mixed martial arts out there, or the only show out there,
yeah.
Right? You know, with all these, you know, especially like WFA, IFL, you know, the more coverage everyone gets, the more people are going to understand the sport and understand the athletes involved.
You came out of the fight against Samuel injury-free?
Oh, completely. Like, my nose was a bit sore. I took an elbow, but that was it. You know,
right.
I'm ready to fight. I'm back in training, ready to go. You know, hopefully November, fighting the UFC card, and then go from there.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you coming on the show once again. We wish you all the best of luck.
Great, I appreciate that. Thanks for all the support, everybody.
Okay, take care, Mark. Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield district of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and thanks to both Mark Hominick and John Fitch for coming on the program. John Fitch, some interesting comments from him. I think, you know, Brendan, we've got to make our picks for Ultimate Fight Night, which is coming up on Tuesday. So we won't really discuss the UFC 64 card too much. But, yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about that card, UFC 64. And I think there's a couple fights out there that perhaps haven't really been hyped too much, but are going to be really good matchups, including Finch and Hironaka and Yushin Akami versus Caleb Starnes, fights like that.
Be in high-speed pursuit to get home to be able to watch that, so... If I make picks, it'll be even more stressful, that drive.
Yeah, it's like I mentioned on our last show, it's going to be an expensive month. There's no question about that, as far as the cable bill goes.
And I don't know what's going on. You know, I give Full Contact Fighter all my bank information, you know, my address, my correct mailing address, and I don't receive those reimbursement checks, so I'm not sure if it's, I don't know, some kind of international finance thing. Maybe you can clear that up.
Well, I think it's just...
The folks back at the head office.
It's probably just take a hint. It's like, you know, in office space, when what's his name at the end of the show, it doesn't get a paycheck, but they just don't tell him that he's fired. I think it's something comparable to that. So with the score 4-4 between us on our picks, we're going to go through the Ultimate Fight Night. I don't know if we'll make picks on every fight, but that card's actually looking really... really good too, and it's free, so that's what I like to hear.
I like to hear it too. I think it's going to be a nice little card, actually. If, it'll be a nice form of relaxation.
The first fight I want to get us to make a pick on is Thiago Alves versus Johnny Alessio. This one I think is really a good welterweight fight. This one's also a tough one to judge, but I think I'm going to go with Johnny Alessio, even though he had a tough time against Diego Sanchez and his last fight, which was in the UFC against Sertikov. I think John's going to come back in finer form for this fight. Not that he didn't impress me in certain aspects against Sanchez, but I think I'm going to go with Alessio.
I got to go with Alessio too. I think I didn't mind either of his last fights, actually, and I think the Diego fight was a sort of an aberration, and his last fight I thought was great. It was unsuspected, and I know he was a big favorite coming in, but he fought a really game guy, and it was a great fight, and he really showed a lot of composure, because he was in deep a couple different times in that fight. Mm-hmm. So, I got to go with Alessio, and I think we can expect to see some big things from him coming up.
Next up, Rory Singer versus Josh Haynes, couple of the Ultimate Fighter stars, veterans, if you will. I'm going to go with Singer on this one. I guess I should explain, you know, why. Josh Haynes always shows a lot of heart, a ton of heart, and, you know, for that, I think he should always be commended. But, you know, even though Rory Singer doesn't have the greatest record, 10-6, you know, in watching him fight, he's got good hands and good jiu-jitsu, and I just think that in all aspects of the game, I just feel that he's better than Haynes, so I'm going to go with Singer.
I think I got to go with Haynes. I don't see Singer as having his head screwed on straight half the time. So again, that may be just a false impression from the television show and from his fight afterwards. But there you go. There's your first pick.
Yeah, first difference. Next, couple middleweights: Nate Marquardt versus Crafton Wallace. And I gotta admit, I don't know much about Crafton Wallace. There's always room for the upset, of course. You know, you just have to look at Joe Lozen versus Jens Palmer in the last UFC for evidence of that. But I think with Marquardt, who's fought around the world, has a great record, international experience, good ability standing, and in particular on the ground, I just think that I'll have to go with Nate on this one.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, that's it? No, just what I said, huh?
Just what you said.
Seth Petruzzelli versus Matt Hamill, which will be an interesting matchup at light heavyweight. You know, this one's kind of tough to call as well, because Matt Hamill has not had a ton of experience, and Seth Petruzzelli's had quite a bit in comparison. I mean, he only has 12 fights versus Matt's 3, you know, if you don't include the fights on the television show. But from what I've seen of Matt, I think that he's going to be able to take Seth down, and he is just, you know, such a great wrestler that I'm going to go with Matt Hamill on this one.
I got to go with him too. I think he's too much of a machine, you know, up and coming in the works, and I think his training partners are just the types of guys to hone in, to hone his skill and his style. You know, they've seen the roadmap for that for people with his attributes, and I think as soon as they get him dialed in, he's just going to be a wrecking machine to a certain extent. I think right up to the very top echelon of people who are going to be able to take care of him.
Next up is Ed Herman versus Jason McDonald, and you know, I'm really excited about this fight. I've had Jason on the show, and having followed Jason's career, began my MMA writing mostly focused on Albertan MMA back in the day. So I followed Jason's career for quite a while, him coming from central Alberta. This fight is really tough to call, and I don't know why I have to go first every time. Why am I making the predictions first? But, you know, I look at this fight, and I think, you know, Jason will definitely give Herman a great test. Jason has done a lot of work on his wrestling, and he's always had good ground. You know, his jiu-jitsu has always been solid, and training with Josh Russell, who's the black belt, Gracie Barra School out of Calgary, that's improved his game. His stand-up's improved. And I just think, though, that Ed Herman will probably be able to pound this fight out. I think he's going to – I don't think he'll stop Jason, but I think he'll probably be able to get the unanimous, you know, or split decision kind of type of victory, taking Jason down, staying on top, and punishing him. You know, that's what I'm going to go with for this call.
All right. Well, I will, unlike yourself, stick with my homeboys. And I'm going to go with McDonald in this one because I think, again, his losses have been good, legitimate losses against tough people. And I like the way he looks, and I think he's hungry for this. And I think, if anything, Herman is probably going to come in expecting to pass this fight, and I think that's what the hype around the fight will probably be. And I see this as being maybe I don't see it as necessarily an upset if McDonald wins, but I think everyone else does, and I think that's what Herman's got to look out for.
So how would you say that Jason would win then?
Well, I think that McDonald's definitely got the better stand-up. I think his wrestling is decent, not as good as Herman's, and I think his submissions are probably a lot better than Herman's, so I see him either catching Herman standing up, or I see Herman not being able to hold him down, and McDonald getting a decision.
All right. Then, of course, the headlining fight, Tito Ortiz versus Ken Shamrock. And before we make the picks, I just want to talk about this fight a little bit.
It's going to be a polemical rant.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
No, not so much a rant, but I find that. And maybe some of the listeners tire of this because I usually try to, you know, view where the hype is for fights, how much people are discussing it, how much is captivating MMA fans, and I think I do that just to try to, you know, get a sense of where how the sport's growing, whether or not it's a fight that's hyped because it's more sensationalistic, more, you know, based on drama rather than the skills of the fighters, whatever the case may be. And I just find, and I'd like to get your opinion, Brendan, that this fight, I think the UFC, I mean, it's free, so they're going to get a lot of people watching it. And every, you know, I'll admit, even myself, I'm curious to see the fight just because of the animosity between Ortiz and Shamrock. But I think it's safe to say that the hype that has surrounded this third installment has been significantly less than the second round.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, I think everyone sees what I still believe to be is a complete mismatch, and the way I look at this fight is it's sort of a dessert at the end of a good meaty fight card. You know, you come to the end and you're like, ah, there might be something nice little at the end here. I think it will be like a dessert. It will be short and sweet, and
maybe a slightly savory, but nothing of real substance to, you know, to take away. Just a nice finish to a good card.
Brendan Lear, ladies and gentlemen, appearing at UFC Poetry Night every Thursday.
But then again, to settle this once and for all, and to sort of hype up the show, because the fight nights have actually, I think, for the UFC, have had a little bit, the ratings have been slightly disappointing, and I think they want to pump that up, and this is a perfect remedy for that. I think putting this on free is going to rope in a lot of viewers who probably bought that pay-per-view, which had huge numbers, were completely disappointed. So it's going to, in a sense, satisfy that animosity, and at the same time, pump up the ratings for the free show, and people will go, wow, they have a lot of really game, legitimate fighters on the free show. Maybe we should watch this more if we're interested in watching, you know, kind of like joke fights like Shamrock Ortiz, then, you know, look what else is out there.
Yeah, and the reason I say that I just don't find it's being hyped is not only am I just talking about, you know, MMA discussion forums, etc., or just media coverage. You know, at my other job, the previous fight, you know, as the sport grows, I do get a lot of people who come up and they know that I'm involved in mixed martial arts. And so they'll ask me questions, and quite often those fans are casual fans, and so that, you know, they'll know their knowledge of MMA is primarily based around the main event. You know, as an example, the Hughes Gracie fight, you know, that was one card where I got asked a lot of questions kind of from casual fans. And this time around for this card, yeah, in comparison to the second fight, you know, I don't even think anyone's even really asked me much about it at all. And the funny thing is, man, is if you look at the UFC and their history of strange ironies and upset victories, the fact that they're themselves as an organization are just looking past this fight, it would be pretty ironic and funny if Ken Shamrock won.
Oh, it would be hilarious because, I think it would be, you know, it would be the best of things and the worst of things because, you know, I have a lot of respect for Shamrock as a fighter for what he's done, but, you know, it's time for him to go and it's time for the big cards to make way for, you know, the up-and-coming game fighters. So if he won, maybe it would prolong his career unnaturally.
See, I don't think so.
Which would be bad.
I think if he won, he'll retire regardless. I think if he wins, I mean, maybe it would depend on the fashion that he won, but I could see him retiring if he won. Let's say he catches Tito and knocks him out or something. I could see him retiring on a high note.
Now, I don't know. I think it's too tempting to keep fighting when people come up and say, well, you know, we'll give you $200,000 to fight one more fight. Well, then that's, you know, one more fight that gets fought and another spot that gets taken up for a better fight that could have happened. So
yeah, fair enough.
I think the only bad thing about this fight is, what the hell is Tito doing with his career? You know, does he really have a sight set on a championship fight? You know, what, he's basically wasted an entire year of his life with this whole Shamrock thing again, and he's not getting any younger either. So, you know, in terms of his own personal goals as a fighter, you know, is he in it just to make the big paychecks, which he has in his last two fights, or, you know, does he want to aspire to bigger and better things? And I think that's the most interesting question.
Well, I think it has to do, you know, and we don't have the insight into his camp and Tito Ortiz himself. It could just be about the money, but it also could be, you know, fighters have a lot of pride in their wins, and when people try to diminish those wins, sometimes they can be talked into having these kinds of rematches. But I think strategically speaking, you're absolutely right. I mean, he has nothing to really gain out of this. You know, he's beaten Ken Shamrock twice. Even for those people who might say this last fight was stopped prematurely, he still has a notable victory over Ken Shamrock once prior. And then he's supposed to be fighting Chuck Liddell. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. But so it's obvious that we're both picking Tito Ortiz to win. But let's try to make a prediction, a more definite prediction on how do you think it's going to go? Do you think Ken's going to run out at him and press him like he did last time?
Did you see the second fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to go just like that.
You think so? So you think Shamrock's going to bull rush him and get taken down?
Yeah.
See, I think Ken might not come out with that game plan, to be honest.
Well, I don't think Ken can have whatever game plan he wants when Tito gets a hold of him and throws him down into a corner and, you know, starts pummeling him again. All the game plans in the world, I think, aren't going to help him, and I think that's an inevitability in this fight.
unless Tito plays it cool and, you know, sort of wants to stand up and make it a little bit better of a show, but that would be stupid for him to do. You know, he's got nothing to benefit by that. He's already gotten paid, and I guess one of the things about this fight is that...
Did he say Ken or Tito?
In the way that you were, you know, it's true that there's no hype surrounding this fight, but you remember the last one, they just came off the reality show, right? And people had a lot invested in their in their personalities, and that's one of the things that that the UFC has been genius in doing, and that they do these little lead-up shows where you get to see what fighters are like and their personalities, and you kind of have a vested interest in them, not necessarily as fighters, per se, like as the best fighters, but just as these dudes who you kind of see like living in a house or like coaching or doing whatever, and that's interesting for you. But as that's the first hype that sort of rode that rode into the second fight. But that's all gone now because I think everyone's seen what a sort of mismatch this is.
Yeah, well, I think that Ken's going to stand back, and I do think Tito will stand and trade with him for a bit and see where he's at. That's my prediction of how it's going to unfold. And I think that if Tito gets caught at all, he'll try to take it to the ground, and he'll probably be able to do that as he always has been able to against Ken. But that's my prediction for how it's going to unfold, and I think it probably will end via a ground-and-pound kind of scenario.
Yeah, I think, you know, Shamrock's got can throw a really hard shot still, and but Ortiz has got a good, you know, his gigantic head is like a, you know, built by Mother Nature, like a shock absorber, and he's taken some good shots, and it's taken repeated shots to put him out of a fight, so I'd be surprised if he would get KO'd with one punch. So, yeah, I can't see it really working out for Shamrock that way. And I don't want to sound disrespectful to him, but I just think this is a bad matchup for him stylistically, and, you know, in the best of days, and, you know, I just don't see the merits of the fight. Like I said, it will be a sweet finish to a good card. And if it finishes fast, then maybe we'll get to see some of the undercard. So
yeah, that's a good point. The one thing I think you can count on is that if Tito wins, there's going to be a very WWF scenario immediately afterwards, and they'll have Chuck in the front row, and Chuck will be running into the octagon because Tito will be talking smack. I don't think he'll be like running up into the crowd waving a flag like he did after he beat Belfort, but
yeah. Well, I think there's one thing you got to know, and then maybe that's why Tito has wasted a year of his life doing this, and that, you know, he's made a lot of money this year, and the next step for him could be his last step in the UFC. So
yeah, well, and I think the reality show did, you know, leaps and bounds for reestablishing his character and showing how good of a coach he is. And, you know, even when you've seen him coach and be in the corner in recent fights, definitely is, I think that's one aspect of his career which has just grown leaps and bounds. And when you listen to the advice he's giving the corner, he seems, and on the reality show as a coach, he's a legitimate coach. I mean, he analyzes the fight very well. You can tell he has a great body of knowledge. He motivates the guys that he's cornering. And, you know, I think that's one side of his career that's really developed this year, I suppose, aside from, you know, his actual fighting. And it's going to be interesting. You know, I'm really looking forward to the undercard in particular, and really looking forward to UFC 64 and the Pride American debut around the corner. So, Brendan, I'll let you get out of here and rest your sore throat. Have fun. Have some pumpkin pie and maybe bring, you know, actually, no, we don't live in the same city, so.
I'm building a giant wheat sheath table ornament for Thanksgiving dinner.
Sweet.
Oh, but the Thanksgiving has actually been bumped from Monday night to Sunday night this year because my family has tickets to see the Rolling Stones, who are playing in Regina.
Oh, wow.
Which seems to have been the biggest event here since they hung Louis Riel. So.
Now, when you guys drive into town, you take one John Deere tractor or two?
Well, when I cross the border from Alberta to Saskatchewan, then we get it. Then we lease a tractor and then do custom combining all the way down to Regina and sort of make the money back for the tractor rental. So
right.
it's good. It takes a little while longer, you know, because you have to stop and slow down for the grain truck and stuff like that. But it's all good.
I make fun, but you know, I love Saskatchewan. Any place that Tommy Douglas had a great career in because Saskatchewan is a great place to me. So I love Saskatchewan. So no one sent me any hate mail.
And send all the Hank Jr. Hank Williams Jr. hate mail to Kelsey Mullen, and then send all the Hank Williams first and third love mail to me.
Right. All right, Brendan.
At fullcontactfighter.com.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you next week.
Happy Thanksgiving, Kelsey.